Okay, well, it's 6:09 here on Thursday evening, December 16th, for the Administrative Control Board meeting for the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District. So that's our call to order. Do we have any public input tonight? Do we have any guests joining remotely?
I am double checking. We do not.
Okay. That's item one. Item two, do we need to go into executive session tonight?
We do not.
Okay, that's...
right back on time now.
Yeah. Item three is the consent agenda, right? I told you guys everything else. So we've got the minutes, and I had a couple of questions from Anna, so I know she was working to get them right. We've got the check register. Do we have any purchase orders?
Okay.
So just maybe we'll go to our table. Do you, Karen, did you have any comments on the minutes? Or the
I did not.
Okay. Ian, you're kind of on the big screen, but we can jump to you. Anything on the minutes or check register?
Yeah. EDM Partners of Woodland Summit Park 2022... water line. Was that pre-work for that project coming up?
Yeah, the design team, some prep work for putting in new water, where to put in water line next year.
Okay. And then the Whitney advertising, the triple swag, just wondering what the triple swag was.
I thought that was in the
list. Oh, you're back in town.
Oh, the swag lounge or whatever? Oh, that, those were our... Christmas gifts for our employees.
No. Okay. So yeah, it was employee Christmas gifts, and well, we purchased a very small amount of inventory for events that we might go to.
Yeah, promo
like
items
for
and new employees.
I think you mentioned last meeting that you were going to do that. Mm-hmm.
With the ARPA, or not the ARPA, sorry.
With a little battery.
Premium holiday savings.
Mm-hmm. Little battery packs kind of flashed.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Ian?
That was it for me, Mike.
Okay, thank you. Joel, any comments on the minutes or
no,
register?
No.
Tim, how about your...
I had some questions about the payee on two items on there that were just identified with the letters LB and then a 4 and a series of numbers, and there was two of them on there. It was pretty clear on the explanation on there. We were talking about the mini excavator cost on there, and then there was a Utah State University research for the wildfire stuff, and I think that I understood that we're doing it, but what is LB... for something or another.
You know what, that for is lock box. For some reason, we have them on the check. On the check register, it shows like the extension or the lock box line and not the name of the vendor. I apologize, I didn't catch that. But for the Utah State one, or that was, they got the Utah State, they have it the lock box. And the same with the mini excavator that we need from the...
Okay,
so LB stands for lockbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
When a vendor has this initial lockbox, some of them have the address kind of weird, and it shows up weird in our vendor list. I think the lockbox for the excavator dealer is the true vendor.
So do we need to revise that, Steve, or is this just a minor... What do you think, Lisa?
Let me look into it. It doesn't talk to I've seen it on the one you trust base, and they kind of had that, but this is the first time I've seen it on the second vendor. Let me look into that and see if we can get that changed or get it printed out differently on the report.
No, I'm sure there's nothing wrong with that. I was just curious about looking at those. Normally, when you look at who you're paying it to and then you see what the explanation is, it's the two of those together that kind of make you say, yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense. The LB didn't make sense.
Yeah.
mean, my recommendation would be, I think it's a clerical error that we need to get fixed on this check register report, that I think the check itself is fine, the payment's fine. If the board's okay, let's get the check register approved. And Steve, if you could kind of clean that up going forward.
Sounds good.
You bet, I will.
Okay. So, yep.
Yeah, so you need a motion?
Yes.
Move that we approve the consent agenda.
You sound good.
Tim and Joel, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. We hear from Ian?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you.
Get that? Aye.
Yeah, we got it. Ian, thanks.
That was unanimous. Okay, we are on item four. The assistant general manager, Lisa, with some comments.
We have the consideration and possible approval of the district's 2022 annual notice of meetings. Can you bring that up?
Yes.
So we just wanted to outline those for 2022. We do have to post it. It's part of our requirement just to let the public know. It's the third Thursday, if that still works for everyone. If there are any conflicts that you know of now that we want to try to address. The only holiday it looks like we'll be dealing with is St. Patrick's Day. So if that's...
Is February 17th during spring break or fall break?
It's just before, because President's Day is later this year.
Okay.
So I think it would come after.
So is it the Thursday immediately before that break?
Mm-hmm. Okay. The rest of them, I think, we're okay as far as holidays go. And school breaks.
Do you need the action by us?
Yes.
Prove it?
Do we want to keep the St. Patrick's Day holiday? That's... We're okay. No one has our St. Patrick's Day plans right now.
We adjourn by 9 o'clock usually, okay. So it's not a problem.
We can go with the 17th, and then if we decide we want to change it, we can certainly change it. We can change any of these days. This is just to give a general guideline.
Okay,
let's go with the 17th, with the third Thursday for every meeting.
Okay.
I just need a motion.
I move to approve the schedule for 2022.
Second.
That's Karen and Joel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. That was unanimous. Looks like we've got some updates from the job descriptions.
Yeah. So, just to give a little background. This job descriptions has been on our timeline all year. It's been a work in progress, really. It's changed scope, I think, a couple times. So we originally started out this process because we had one job description for all of our water operators. So whether our water operators were in the transmission department, the distribution department, or treatment, they were all under the same job description. We felt like that needed to be parsed out into the different distribution, transmission, and treatment areas, as those duties can be significantly different. So we wanted to try to identify those. The other thing...
So for transmission, is that Lost Canyon?
Correct.
And all the pump stations.
Mm-hmm. And then treatment is...
the treatment plan at Signal Hill, at Promontory.
Wells, or... Silver Springs.
Wells falls into distribution.
Yeah.
And same with the spring.
And then distribution is
13.
Pipes and repairs.
Correct. Pipes, hydrants, PRVs, control valves.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
So we also at the same time we were throwing around the idea of what we wanted to, we've been using the standard water operator. We thought our employees had really doing some more technical work, and we weren't sure operator really fit the full title of what the employees were working on. So we decided to go with a technician. description instead of a water operator. We think that more fully encompasses the detail work that they're doing in each one of the areas. We also wanted to allow for some advancement for those employees that were looking for to take another step forward into a management position or to a supervisory role. We wanted to create a lead technician, so they would be a technician, a lead technician, and then the manager level. And we think for right now that will serve our purposes for the size of the district currently. And with that technician, you can have multiple technicians. Within the lead technician, there can be multiple lead technicians. But we just wanted to allow, and we had heard feedback from the group previously, that they didn't feel like there was really a defined path once you became a water operator and maybe got one or two certifications. They didn't feel like there's growth or really defined growth. So we wanted to try to identify that a little bit more for them.
Lisa, do you have some uniformity across the district with regards to managers? Would be someone that is in charge of two or more people, or generally three people?
Generally. So
your span of control is like one to three or something?
Yes,
probably not in all cases. You can't.
Not in all cases. Yeah. We're just too small at this point. Like, for example, at Lost Canyon, our manager there has only had one. Ryan, on the other hand, would be an extreme where he has six employees reporting to him. So, right, it can be from one to six.
Gotcha.
And this will be only on 15 minutes, so I'll try to keep this brief. We also... as we started to get into this, we realized we really needed to dig a little bit deeper and dive a little bit deeper, and this is why it took a little bit longer, to understand the tasks that are being completed at each one of the departments and being able to identify those roles and responsibilities, and then how do we break those roles and responsibilities up into these categories. So Scott sat down with Brian and the department managers at each one of those departments and went through a comprehensive task list and identified all the activities that are going on in that department, and then identified who in the organization of these three would be responsible. And some may overlap and not, but tried to really put some time into developing job descriptions specific to those technicians in those areas. Then Scott and I from that worked to put together the job descriptions that more kind of took those tasks and then put them into a more formal document that we've presented today in those several job descriptions per department. The next step in this process is taking these job descriptions and creating that lead technician training program. We're currently planning to work on that in the first quarter of 2022. That would be, if you're a technician, what steps are we going to want you to go through in order to attain that lead role? It's not just going to be assigned to you. So we're going to jump into that, Scott, myself, and Brian, next year. That will, you know, I envision it being some management training. AWWA has a management course. It's a two-day management course that I think would be good. It would involve some training in finance, getting some sitting with Steve, going through budgets. So kind of just a gamut of everything that Mountain Regional does, and, you know, some steps in order for those employees that would like to take the initiative to do that. And we would try to organize that in the first quarter, maybe fall into a little bit of the second, come back to the board in April or May of 2022 with the job descriptions, with the training program, present that to you, get more feedback, your responses, and then finalize the job descriptions. These job descriptions, again, have just been vetted by Scott and myself. They will also go to the county during this time, so they'll be able to provide their input, not only on the descriptions, but also the training program, and then try to implement this, work to a goal of June 1st to implement this.
Is there any effort in there to align it with other county positions, or is there just none that are... Because the sewer district is not in the county necessarily, right? So you're dealing with you don't have power or anything in the county, so this is really the only operation that has these technician type things. Is it, so in the county, did they try to align that with like any other job category across the county?
I'll say this specifically. When the county went out and did a salary survey this last year, and we asked if we could be a part of it, and they said no because your job descriptions don't match up with any of ours.
Yeah.
So when we generally look to other entities for types of job descriptions or similarities, we look to Park City, we look to the sewer district. We've looked at this technician. I think the initial technician description came from Jordan Valley Water and Sewer. No, Central Utah Water. We met with their HR department pre-COVID, I think in the very beginning.
Yeah.
And we got some, Dave Hardy is his name, we got some insight into how they were, and to be honest, this is their kind of system.
You've got a really good program.
We tried to scale
this is based off of Dave
to our size.
And Jim Brooks over there, he's...
Yeah, so Dave Hardy runs the big water treatment plant in Aurora. Mm-hmm. And he's the gentleman we sat down with, and really, this is, you know, largely built upon, you know, their system and our takeaways from
it. I see the presentations they
do. Yeah, they do a really good job.
Well, good job.
Yeah, so, and even this operator, this lead technician training program, you know, Dave has to be honest, his training program manual is like 125 pages of proficiencies that he expects for his lead technicians. So we have all of that information. So again, we think it's a great structure, great programs, and that's what's led to where we're at today.
Are the job requirements and the descriptions, are they structured consistently with the way all the others job? Because what I looked in there is that they have requirements, and it was like a high school education or something like that. And then there was another section down there that said like desired or something like that. And they, like every one of them, there was a desire to get their degrees or something.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that help? I was kind of wondering about it.
I think it was more of a, I think it was a preferred. So, say for example, we wouldn't necessarily, not every one of our managers right now has a bachelor's degree. But if we were looking for a candidate that was coming in and there was somebody that had a bachelor's degree in water, I don't know, resources or some kind of natural resource, I think that would be a preferred characteristic over somebody who maybe didn't have. So that's what we were trying to identify.
So they haven't had any problem with defining it that way?
We have. I think it's been largely like that, you know, certainly in some... The way our job description, the format of our job descriptions has been consistent for quite a while with respect to having requirements and that having preferred, you know, what attributes...
So if you have two internal candidates that are going for a manager's position, one has a degree, one doesn't, and you prefer it, you have to take all these other factors into account if you actually want the non-degree person to be taking that position, even though you prefer to have someone in there.
Yeah, I mean, typically we have a hiring matrix that we have to work through whenever we're going to hire somebody, so that, you know, the hiring committee, if you will, sits down and says, okay, what are the skill sets we're really after? And a lot of those are built from the job description, so... I think in a case where a preferred skill or certification or whatnot is there, then that would be considered by a hiring committee. I don't think we have a specific weighting to handle that, but that's how it would be.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
I have a bunch of questions.
Okay.
Real simple. Does it... The technician knows what he or she needs to do to become the lead technician, and the lead technician knows what the manager job is as well. So there's a good, easy progression if warranted, if there's an opening. But do we also know the number of people that's in batch?
Let's see. operations is about half of Mountain Regional. So I'd say 13,
14
is the number that's popping into my head.
So what do you do if someone says, well, hell, I've been a technician for 17 years. I want to be a lead technician. What do you do?
So that's what we're going to start working on in the beginning of next quarter.
That's the goal of all.
Yeah, this is the goal.
Define, what do I got to do?
So we'll be putting that together and presenting it to you
in
the spring.
All right. And that's it so far. I have some other questions, but that's it so far.
Okay.
I mean, high level, the reason we're bringing this to you now is a couple things. One is it's something that Lisa's had on our timeline for the year for completion. We wanted to hit kind of the 90% completion level on this, get it to the board for review, so that the first half of next year, we're going to develop this lead operator training program. We're going to come back to you, like Lisa said, likely in the May meeting, with all of this together. And the job descriptions need to be approved by the board. And we're trying not to overload you with, 30 pages of job descriptions and a lead operator training program. And so,
I think it was 30 pages.
Yeah. You have to prove anything. So they get to take a sneak peek and then come back to it.
This is the sneak peek. We'll take your feedback. We're going to come back in a few months with a whole kit and caboodle and ask for your approval.
No. I thought it was great. I think in a competitive hiring environment, that's what you're going to need in order for people to progress. And, especially if the job force out there is really young, that's really... I think it's really getting ahead of everything, and I think it's great.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Any other questions? Okay. Just one other comment while we're talking about 2022. I didn't have a timeline in your packet. Staff will be working on putting together just a timeline for 2022 to give certain milestones that we'll be hitting, whether it's the budget, the audit. We're going to be doing an impact fee study this year, a rate study. So we'll populate those and have it at the January board meeting to kind of give you an outline of what the year looks like for those more important meeting dates.
And we're also going to see the minimum and the maximums of the different positions.
Yep, we'll have.
So we'll have three ranges for the technician, the lead, and the manager.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Lisa.
Sure.
Item five is Sam Grenley has some comments on what's been going on.
Let me pull that up. So this is just a little bit more in-depth walkthrough of the capital projects we went over the past year and provide sort of a virtual photo tour of some of them. And started to break them down into three tiers. Moving forward, this is kind of how I'd like to present updates to the board moving forward. These tier one projects, we're going to target quarterly board updates, and we'll define a tier project basically on 5% of the annual operating budget or greater, which right now would fall between $400,000 and $450,000 construction project. So that's kind of what we're doing right there. The only Tier 1 project we officially wrapped up this year was Hidden Creek, and that was the majority of the remaining upgrades of the community water annexation. Substantial completion happened in 2020. However, in working with the HOA, they had a paving project scheduled, and trying to be good neighbors and win them over as customers. We did everything we could to work with them and ended up delaying some of our landscaping and punch list items to allow their paving project to happen first. And then we actually wrapped up the landscaping for them within the original contract, which was a little concerned about, but it ended up working.
Did the contractor's final product meet your expectations?
The final product did. I think we ended up with a good product for the district. Scheduling the fall was certainly an issue. Administratively, it was kind of a large workload with the number of change orders and back and forth, but the final product, I think, I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Good.
So you didn't sell or anything, you got what you wanted?
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah.
So you had pluses and minuses and ended up at about 328.
We had nine change orders that netted out about $300.
Yeah. And you didn't have to cut any scope to get there?
We did. The major scope that was cut from the project was one master meter, which would actually meter the Colby School, I guess, or the Holcomb. I don't know what it is. No, sorry. But it just was not possible due to utility conflicts, how we were going to approach it coming into the project. So that was the major cut. So that certainly helped sway this number to look a little rosier than it is.
So, Scott, when did we start, or when did we close the community water loan?
Or was it
19?
2019,
because
it's 2019 bond. It was December of 2019, and we're at 2021. So it was 2 years. And we just did the final draw to the state, and we came in. Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we still had $250,000 left.
Yeah, I was just trying to get a sense of...
Yeah, I think $250,000
the time frame of what we planned. I think that's 2 years of hard work, and you kind of recognize this. But that's an expense.
I think that's a good point. I think that's, likely to be expected in future answers.
2 years.
2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Easy.
Okay. And we spent 2 years prior to
that. Yeah, I was going to say that.
2 years prior to closing.
When I first joined the board, that was like the big thing.
Lots of discussion about that 2.6 number.
Yeah.
And we ended up, who would have thought?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad we ended up where we did. And what will happen is that payment will just come off the back end of the loan, so they'll just end up paying a shorter amount of time. We'll be collecting assessments for a short amount of time. We'll pay it off really quick. So, it worked out.
Well, I like your format, Sam, with the two and these
it's
large ones.
Better.
And you've got these, kind of these tier twos next.
Okay, tier two. So, Struck didn't have a lot of exciting photos for tier two later on. It's tough to get good waterline action shots, I guess you could say. But a tier two project is essentially an externally managed and publicly bid project, but not necessarily meeting that dollar threshold to necessitate a quarterly update or progress update. And the first project that was finished this year as part of in the tier two category was the Cove and Willow Creek water lines. We had a similar situation where we reached substantial completion this past year within the contract window. But due to snowfall, we couldn't tie a bill on it landscaping-wise, so it got pushed into this year. So we withheld not only retainage, but some landscaping budget from the contractor, and then had them button everything up this year with both HOAs and then Basin Rec was involved as well. And that ended up being also a really successful project. We worked with MC contractors who we're really comfortable with. That ended up coming right on budget with no changes. And then our big gap
for two.
And then the big gap of project this year is the Kilby Waterline, which we've been given kind of board updates in the department update packets. And again, substantial completion occurred in the contracted window, and we managed to get all the punch list items done before the snowfall and issue final completion. We were able to trim a little budget off the project by finding a good location to tie the water line into the existing water line we're utilizing a little earlier than we thought on the plans, but still getting out of the corrosive soil environment. So that ended up working in our favor a little bit there. We also had a great contractor, Newman.
Newman turned out okay.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So if we had the chance to work with him again, I definitely would do so. They had a good crew out of Santa Cruz. actually that drove up every day.
Were we happy with all three of the completions? I mean, there's nothing that you're pissed off about, pardon my language. I guess that's really my question. I mean, we don't have to go back and fix anything. We can move forward. We can go on another project.
Yeah, I think if there's anything I had a hard time with, it was probably just scheduling issues with the Ingreen project.
Yeah, that's always the case.
But I can't, you know, I can't think anything in the final product that ended up working against us.
Okay, and I'll ask a question again. Do you think we're going to have to go back and do any fixes to Kilby or to any of the other two? Anything? I mean, you think they're done right?
Yeah, so far so good. And we've actually, Scott and I have been discussing internally, trying to formalize a warranty period on these externally good projects and having more control over that in the future. So that hasn't come up on any of these projects, but I think it's an improvement we can make on our 2022 project.
So yes, we're learning from each project.
Totally. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Tim, that's maybe a question, or Tim or Mike, you might have some insight into that. So we have a 1-year warranty period for all developer built infrastructure that then gets essentially deeded over to Mountain Regional when the project's completed, right? So if anything, you know, any sort of, you know, punch list items crop up in that first year, then at the end of that first year, the developer has the obligation to pay for it, and if they don't, we withhold 10% of the performance bond to have some money to be able to cover some small items.
So now you withhold that when you finalize the contract?
Yeah, so when we finalize the contract, the performance bond is for 110% of the cost of the infrastructure.
And so you're holding their bond.
We're holding, yeah, that 10%, you know, remainder of their bond.
And they're paying for that.
Yeah.
For that coverage.
Yeah.
To cover 10% of the cost.
Okay. Correct. Yeah, so we have historically not done that for our own Mountain Regional managed projects with a contractor, right? So here we are, Kilby Waterline project.
Yeah,
we did that project. Yeah. So
we're just relying on the contractor's reputation to come and fix it at that point.
Yeah. And either your experience is that typical? Do you see?
We usually don't carry forward. We just rely on them. You know, we said it's a year, and we'll call you.
Especially since you guys are the ones that are actually contracting with them. I mean, you know, the problem with the developer being in the middle is then, you know, they're the ones that have to go back and ask for it. So I think the way you're doing it is fine.
Yeah, you could ask for the warranty, but you never know what you're getting for that. See, the issue there is they're supposed to be installing things in accordance to a quality control plan, and it's a quality control plan that you've approved. Mm-hmm. So if you have an inspector that's out there watching the work going in accordance with the specifications, then what is it that you're going to warranty against? If something starts breaking up on the subgrade, they're going to say, we did it exactly according to the plans and you were watching it go in. But if you have a facility that has pumps and electrical and all that kind of stuff, there might be a product warranty that goes along with that.
Yeah.
You'd want to collect those and get the standard product warranty that you have and hold on to those, because those are bench tested somewhere else. You're not looking at it. They just come with some sort of piece of paper that says somebody looked at it and looked like it was working.
Yeah.
And you know, I would hold on to those. But when you're talking about installing pipe and, you know, get the certs on the pipes, hold on to them, that type of stuff. But as far as like the warranty, I don't know what you're getting for if you're going to put it in the bid.
It's good feedback.
You're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day,
what are you
you're going to have to argue that something went in not according to specs in order for the warranty to trigger.
Yeah. And to your point, we're inspecting it, that's on us. So. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay.
that last little tier, I'll run through these real quick. These are just things we manage internally, use outside help often for some work, but...
And how is the budget established? Is it just a consensus that it should take about that much?
Yeah, so...
Sure.
Not too far off, but yeah, we do put a... We develop a cost on all the projects annually when we develop the budget, and we do track against it. This exercise, when I was taking, I'm kind of going back retroactively. I didn't track the proposed budget against the project budget, but moving forward in 2022, I think I've got a schedule and a way to be able to track that moving forward. It'll be a little bit easier, I think, for the board to follow.
So it's kind of, that's a capital improvement plan question, and so who prepares that? Did we get some help with that, or is that all internal?
So when we got to impact fee plan at that level, I guess we've had external support on cost estimates in the past.
Correct. So our annual capital projects are usually a blend of impact fee eligible projects.
Yeah.
And non-impact fee eligible projects. The impact fee eligible projects, we have a high level engineer's estimate of probable costs. But internal capital projects, those are more of internal planning exercises of, you know, what, you know, we should have a pretty good idea of price per linear foot of pipe to go in. We call our pump suppliers, we get general costs put together to go into the capital budget as part of the budget process, and that's what Sam's talking about, that we can track against that.
Yeah, that was my only thing I was going to add to Scott. These projects they're always in our wheelhouse. You know, we've got something from last year, 2 years ago we can track against. We've got good unit costs, feel comfortable coming up with a number generally.
Very familiar with. Okay.
So we finished off the new tank well. That was also a community water upgrade. It was a source development piece of the greater community water projects. And we've got it fully operational, tested, and operating permit with our state regulatory authority.
Good.
So it's ready for peaking source if needed this summer.
So how much water is that pumping out?
Not very much. 50 to 60 gallons a minute, 50-something is what it's rated to.
We could probably get 50 gallons a minute out of it with a pump test.
If you remember, we test pumped it at 300-plus, and then when we did the grout seal, we basically sealed off the production zone. And that's just well drilling, putting wells in. We didn't do anything wrong. It's just, that's why I didn't like wells very much.
Yeah.
Middle Valley Booster Pump Station, we rearranged some metering in order to kind of change the configuration of how we're pulling water off of Promontory and kind of into the main hub of the district, which we called Atkinson Zone.
Is that the one that goes from the well across?
So there's one main trunk line that comes down Promontory Ranch Road, basically all the way to the plant. And then there's a line that tees off of the same line and goes towards the beach club where our Middle Valley pump station is. And at that pump station, we have another flow control valve, basically, where we can dictate flow coming down the hill through an alternative pathway where a pipeline was put in. I believe there was a thought of putting a tank over there at some point, which has since passed. But the transmission line remains. We're trying to make use of that instead of, you know, upgrading water lines in the road, more cost-intensive alternatives to convey the water.
Yeah.
So that's the general idea.
It comes down, you know, the cut above the Palisades division? It comes down that dirt road, basically.
I hacked my dog.
Right over the water. And then the last big one is our Spring Creek Spring Formation Project. That we kind of got handed earlier in the year, this past year, where we had some bacteriological samples that came back that triggered a new designation for the quality of the source water, which put us into a new treatment standard in order to utilize the water and we were concerned with trying to get, it is a critical source of the district, and we wanted it online for peak season this year. That's what necessitated.
What's Summit doing there? What's Summit Water doing there?
They're doing something similar. I don't know the exact details, but they have a chlorination facility and some sort of contacting basin, and I assume their configuration of the basin, their pump stations, tanks, etc., allow them to meet the same disinfection standard. But I don't know.
Is your question for what are they doing now, or what are they doing in the future to be able to continue?
What are they doing now?
That's same discarded.
Yeah, I think, yeah, to your point, it's an even more critical source for them. They have a majority share of the spring water.
Were they doing that simultaneously, like at the same? They were over there working at the same time. Are those locations are about what, 100 feet apart?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
But they had more infrastructure in place that helped kind of meet that disinfection standard. So there wasn't as big of a capital project, I guess, per se, at least from what I understand. But yeah, we were in contact with Summit quite a bit up front when we still, things were in flux, how we're going to be able to actually utilize the spring this year, whether it necessitated a full-on surface water treatment system with membranes similar to what we have on Promontory and Signal Hill. So early on, it was a collaborative effort with them, but once it was clear we could take this chlorination approach, we kind of went our separate ways. That was it.
Okay.
And then just include some photos, trying to make a little mini tour.
Oh, what a nice looking building.
Yeah, I think it turned out nice.
Do we have a standard, like, do pipes have to be certain colors that indicate certain...
We like blue. Yeah.
So we like blue, but it doesn't have to be blue.
Yeah, generally. Yeah, certainly at the plant, things are color-coded as processed water.
Would that building cost per square foot?
What's that?
What's the cost per square foot of
it? Of the building?
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you. But that's only part of the building, actually. That's the valve structure and pump that's able to convey water to and from the existing community water tank, which is up Willow Draw on the can. Well, I guess it's Park City Street of them, or whatever we're calling it. And then down here in the bottom left corner is actually another full PRV facility that helps create new pressure zones throughout the community water neighborhood that kind of increase the level of service for all the customers there.
So which way does that usually go? Are we pumping water up to that tank?
Rarely.
With that pump?
So previously, the only possible inputs into the tank were the two wells up Willow Draw.
Yeah.
There was no way to bring water up to the tank and then feed community.
Right.
You know, if we had an emergency situation or lost a well, which we did lose one of the wells this past year. So this is like a resiliency effort to help make it a more robust system.
And important factor with the ski lodges or the restaurants up the hill, that tank supplies, right?
So, right. So the tank not only supplies community water, storage, and fire flow, but it's also the suction for a booster pump station owned and operated by the LFS.
Yeah.
That's nice stuff.
Yeah, but generally the flow of water is coming towards us through a flow control valve, which operates.
The wells goes into the tank.
And the wells can generally meet the demand of this entire community water system.
And through this one, then that pump comes on and we feed into there. So that's good. The community water is basically taking care of themselves and we're just backing it up.
Yeah, now we have it configured in a way we can even utilize surplus water.
Yeah.
Which, that's certainly a goal of mine or something that's always in the back of our head is trying to make things more resilient whenever we get a chance. We almost lost the spring sources here. Wells go down. Whenever we have the opportunity, I think we can try to do that. No tier 2 photos. Just a few photos of some of the equipment that was part of the spring project. Finished piping at the well, and then kind of halfway through are some of the piping modifications up in the middle of it. And then this chart is going to be kind of a template I'm going to try and use for next year to track the projects and be able to present to the board quarterly. Just trying to see everything at a high level on one piece of paper, see see how we're tracking schedule wise, budget spent, and I'm also throwing our design efforts and also internal engineering studies on here just as a FYI. We can run through those as necessary, but
so these are all construction projects that you're showing on there. They don't have any of the design work,
right? So yeah, from a schedule and reporting perspective, these are only construction projects in the tier 1, 2, 3. Any sort of design efforts or internal study we do offer on water quality purposes or whatnot. I was going to show and track on this annual schedule. So definitely open input if there's anything.
That's good.
Yeah, no, that was really
helpful. Like a different approach, we can incorporate that. But I hope it's an improvement over what we've done this past year.
Thanks, Dan.
And sorry, this is going long, so I will try and go a little faster on this. So the second thing we wanted to chat about is the design efforts that happened up at Signal Hill this year. It was an abnormally large engineering design project for the district with $125,000 budget or so. So this is just focusing on the optimization piece. So just looking at what we have now at the plant. It obviously builds in what we're trying to do with the expansion, but this summary of this work is just on the existing infrastructure. So the deliverables were 4 technical memorandums, TMs, using an acronym.
No, I appreciate the way that all of the acronyms were spelled out.
But it's not like it was in a vacuum and they're just handing us this document. Most of the work was collaborative throughout the year and with workshops and I'm really happy with how it worked with the Jacobs team and involving our treatment operations staff. And, I think it ended up being a good finished product. If you guys want to get into it, just let me know. I can send you the full memos.
Well, I've read through everything. So is this like the framework for us to, you know, do the new design? I mean, like it seems like, I don't know, it seems like, you know, Could we benefit from having more storage? Or it seems a lot of it's very engineering technical, so you know. But like more backwash stations, and you know, could we pump it different times of year where there's less turbidity and things like that?
So it wasn't the intention of the optimization piece to work towards the expansion. I mean, at that point, we weren't even contracted with Jacobs for, you know, full blown expansion effort. But ultimately, to your point, I think it identified a lot of the things we need to address or would like to with the expansion effort. So there's a lot of that going on in these memos. But they're meant to be as a standalone effort that the district could take and try and make improvements to the process in the short term. But we end up in this situation where now we have identified and we know we're going to expand the plant. And we're trying to balance that where we don't want to kick every can down the road to expansion. I mean, it's not.
But a lot of these, the acid is part of the expansion.
Right.
And then the trading out the GAC is sort of an annual event. And so I thought we were doing that every 2 years. And we were.
So we have 4 vessels of GAC. And every other year, Mike, so you're right, every 2 years, we replace 2 of the vessels. So for each given vessel, it has a 4-year life. That's how the district's operated for years.
Yeah.
Is it the same thing with the membranes where we replace 2 sets or we just replace 1 set every...
The membranes were a little different.
4 years.
From a financial perspective, we put money aside, assuming a 7-year life, which is what we've experienced. We have 4 membrane skids, and the most recent and really the only, I think, replacement that we've done on membranes, we did it across 2 years. So we did 2 skids in, I forget, 2019 maybe, and then 2 skids in 2020.
Every 2 years.
So do you have to get the turbidity down to a certain level before you throw it at the membranes or just clogs it up, or do you... Is that why that's so important?
That's a good question. So That is one possibility. The membranes are robust and capable of having raw water going directly onto the membrane, which would be a direct filtration plant, I guess, in the water system. But we currently kind of have a hybrid where we do have a pre-treatment step. And the idea traditionally in a pre-treatment step, in a conventional, you know, sedimentation, dual media filter plant, you know, old technology, the idea there would very much be reducing turbidity as much as possible in pre-treatment. But we have, I would say, like a hybrid approach between those two of our plants.
I like the particle size idea that, right, you start off, you get the big stuff easy with sedimentation, then you go to a little tighter filters, and you get, and then because you save, because the membranes are so tight,
yeah,
and you save them to get the little stuff.
Right.
So, what are we budgeted for on GAC? Right? Because it's expensive.
Right? You know? So again, you know, our, before we did the optimization study, the district's been operating a 4-year GAC replacement schedule, and it costs about, to regenerate the GAC, take the existing, regenerate it, the GAC, put a little bit of new in, it's about $40,000 per vessel. If you want all new, it's about $60,000-ish per vessel. And so, you know, to address your direct question, Mike, about cost and kind of how we're paying for it, I think I've covered it. I don't know if you've got a deeper question.
Well, we just had took a 4-time increase,
yep,
in GAC.
Yep. So that was right? Their, so that was their recommendation.
That was their recommendation. We haven't done anything,
okay,
yet.
I see.
Right. So the what we're going to do to follow up on that recommendation is for 2022. We're going to fully replace the media in 2 of the vessels. We have
brand new.
So $60,000 per vessel. We have historically regenerated material. And what we want to do is we want to learn, if we get brand new material, how does it perform across 2022? What does the life, the service life look like? And then at the end of 2022, when we get into budget season, we're going to have some decisions to make on what, how do we want to go forward.
Because it might do better if you regenerate it every year and the stuff doesn't get down as deep into the pores. If you let it sit for 4 years, it's harder to regen.
Yeah, there's much, this is a much deeper conversation. We could probably talk for 2 hours on. There's a whole biological treatment piece that we're picking up with GAC that is, you know, older, if you will, that is not working in an adsorptive capacity, that we are actively talking with Jacobs about, you know, better understanding that and then applying those lessons learned to the new expanded facility.
This is really well thought out.
Yeah, was that? I mean, it was an interesting report, although, like, you know, it almost kind of gets too much. Like so.
Very
so will the acid? So the, does the acid create the what is it? The byproducts that we don't want, and that's why we try and reduce the amount of acid that we use. Or
so we currently use no acid at
okay.
the plant, and the goal for adding acid, which was one of the memos. Kind of looked at was to just allow us to stabilize the influent water and as a result the treatment process throughout the year, because we see big swings in
yeah.
temperature and pH.
pH is the deal. It's like when your pH goes up,
yeah.
the solubility goes down, and that's when you precipitate. And so if we add the acid, we can keep the pH down, and then that stuff stays in solution.
But is like one process more organic or cleaner than another, or is that just
all kinds of ways to raise and lower pH, right?
Yeah, and the approach Jacobs lined out is fairly simple. I mean, it's just putting high dose acid in the pretreatment at the front of the plant,
yeah.
which is also cheap and effective way to control water stability. It's the, probably the easiest way to approach it. And makes sense for our treatment plant, I think.
Yeah,
Park City's taken a similar approach. At their Quinn's treatment plant has the same water source over the years, so we're going to try and learn off, you know, piggyback off them a little bit and pick their brain.
So to streamline the discussion a little bit, I think we talked about the GAC, right? I think we kind of covered some of the key points from the GAC. On the acid side, I think by better controlling pH, we can reduce the calcium precipitate fouling in the treatment plant. The concern with our current facility is that we don't have a safe way to house, if you will, that acid. And we don't want our operators moving strong acids around. We're just not set up to do that. So, you know, I think that the recommendation at this point is we absolutely want to incorporate that into the expansion and have a chemical room where our operators aren't moving chemicals around to have a much safer process, and we would implement that. Okay.
And the only other thing to add on that acid feed system is not only is it going to control water stability at the plant, but throughout the whole distribution system. So that's part of the idea too, is control scaling or how corrosive the water is in the pipe network, even outside of the plant, which is another goal we want to accomplish throughout this one. And then the last thing to just touch on briefly, I guess, is we evaluated our current pretreatment setup on the bench. So in a lab type setting, we tried different coagulants, different mixing, flocculation times, different ways to approach the mixing, and lowering pH, enhanced coagulation is the treatment term there. And the end result is there are a number of steps that we could take to improve turbidity reduction across the front of the plant. But when you implement those on the bench and then filter the water, we don't see any organics reduction as a result of those pre-treatment steps. So for our issues and our water quality parameters, we really want to improve moving forward. We can't fix it at the front of the plant. So
you can't filter it out, really. It's like these organics are dissolved.
Yeah.
The membranes they get right through.
Yeah, the membranes, I forget the percentage off the top of my head, but we reduce the organics across the entire plant by about half of the influent concentration. And the majority of that reduction happens in the GAC contactors, not through the membranes. And virtually no removal happens at the front of the plant through pretreatment. So it's a little discouraging that we can't implement these things to kind of have a water quality benefit, but at the same time, I don't know, it's something to shoot for our plant expansion, trying to take a look at it. The one really positive effect pretreatment step still has is it does add some robustness to the plant. You know, if we do see a huge turbidity event, a runoff event, there's a forest fire or something, it will, to some extent, help bulletproof the plant and take some load off the membranes. But how we're operating it now, we don't see the cost-benefit analysis there to make big investments in the front of the plant when we can't really get a big water quality impact coming out the other side. So that's the last...
Spend the money on the GAC.
Yeah.
Has the expansion square footage been determined yet, or is it just has to fit within the property?
Obviously, Scott, like everything fits within the property, we discuss them outside.
I have clients that live across the street, so yes, they have to fit within the property.
Yeah. I mean, we even thought, Scott brought up the idea of maybe moving creatures into Lost Canyon or somewhere off-site. Like, you know, we're looking at everything at this level, but at a high level, expansion, we've just got approximate dimensions based off Jacob's information on how much square footage they're going to need for our plant throughput.
They were super creative at 3 Kings.
Yeah.
For Park City's plant.
We've had one expansion workshop with them, and you know, it was really taking the takeaways from this optimization study of this optimization study identified the deficiencies of our existing plant, right? Not only do we need to treat more water, but it identified things that we need to try to improve upon. And so they kind of talked about all the different process step options, you know, sort of a menu of options of these are different ways that you could address those issues. and we're going to come back together in January and have a further discussion there with some price tags on what those options look like. And they want to have some understanding from us as far as our cost tolerance, you know, for 2026. You know, I think the way that this is ultimately going to go is Sam and I will have a number of options that we want to accomplish in the long term. I think that there's going to be a phasing approach where we've got to treat more water by 2026, so we're going to, what do we have to do to get to that point? And then, you know, phase two, phase three to get some of the other nice water quality improvements and such for the long term, but that don't absolutely have to happen by 2026. I think that's, in my gut, I think that's where we're going to go. Obviously, there's a cost, right, for us to delay some of these other phases. So,
but the ultimate square footage, just in general, is going to be greater than it would be if you started with a new plant trying to get the same thing, right? Because you're staging it.
Probably.
Yeah.
You're gonna end up with some square footage there that's not used simply because you staged it.
Probably.
Unless you can figure out a way to do that.
Yeah.
Keep it low.
Yeah. So those are some of the discussions we'll be having. What are the options and how do we pull it off financially?
Okay. Well, I think that's. Any other questions for Sam?
What if we have a moratorium on building? Will that change our thought process and what we're going to do or what we're not going to do? Does it make sense?
It could potentially change the timing. So I think the improvements that we want to make, that's kind of what I was sort of getting at with my previous comment. So there's improvements that we want to make at this treatment plant, right? It's not just the expansion, but there's process improvements. And I think we want to make those, you know, in the long term. The timing of the expansion need would change if the moratorium is put in place.
Well, just so you guys know, I think there could be a moratorium. Okay. And I think we need a plan for that.
Well, but this is East County and not Snyderville Basin.
No, I know, but it might affect East County as well.
Huh.
It was in the council meeting last night.
I didn't realize that.
So. Yeah, and that kind of, I mean, it's a mixed blessing.
Yeah.
Obviously, we want some type of growth, but by the same token, I think we can really prepare if we do have a moratorium, whether it's 4 months, whether it's 6 months or 9 months or whatever, just a word of caution. That's a good point, Joel.
And I think
you're the promise of making promises again.
The M word.
I'm not making promises. I'm trying not to. But I mean, there could be a moratorium, and like I said, that's a bit of blessing. It'll allow us to get a lot of stuff done. But by the same token, we don't know what the result's going to be.
I think that what's nice about the way the contract is, or where we're at in the process, is that 2022 is getting us to a conceptual level, right? 10% design. So I think a lot of these questions are going to be answered over the next year.
Yes, yeah, so do I.
I think that we're going to be in a, you know, if that happens, we're going to be in a position to be able to slow down or speed up or whatever we need to do.
I mean, that may help us in the long run, but I guess we have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay. All right. So are you ready for item six?
I think so.
Comments, but
yeah, it's a nice. Thanks for Sam for doing that. And you know, as a reminder, the plant expansion, our target for, you know, our target is to bring that new facility, that upgraded facility, online in 2026. So all of the work we're doing today and the scheduling that Sam's been doing is built on, you know, that plant operational summer 2026. Well, at the end of 2021 here, I have to deliver a contract, a proposed contract to Weber Basin, which encompasses our regional water supply delivery to Weber Basin in 2026. Okay, so as I work through that analysis, we have a number of things are very dynamic right now. Growth. In 2019, we did our impact fee study, and our previous 10-year average for a number of ERCs connecting in a year was 124. In 2021 through December 2nd, we committed 789.
2024, that's a projection.
Nope. So in 2019, the impact fee study average was 124 ERCs. In 2021, January 1st through December 2nd, we had 789 ERCs committed.
So I mean, basically, like we were saying, it's going to move the demand curve to the left by 2 years. The other thing is, it might be steepening it too.
Yeah, exactly. So to Tim's point, the water that we have projected to put on the, you know, to deliver per this contract in 2026 was 250 acre feet. Well, we just burned through the majority of that this year with the growth accelerating faster than what we were predicting. So
how many acre feet it's in ERC right now?
In our 2019 study, it was a half.
Okay.
It's the reality is it's closer to 0.4 now. So I had about 425 ERCs in my projections.
You mean in actual usage?
In actual
usage. You divide the number of ERCs by what we're pumping out, it turns out to be about
0.4. Yeah.
So it's hard to do this to decide what to put on the table because its growth is. And once it's on, once we commit to providing it, we are bound to it.
We're bound to it.
But yet, if we burn through it, we just get the revenue, or
the trade-offs are right. If we provide that water, right, then we get revenue for it, right? So it's about that 250 acre feet that I had originally projected. It wasn't contractual because it was outside of the 5-year window. But that 250 acre feet has a revenue stream of about $600,000.
I remember it was significant.
Right. So I'm looking at growth, right? Which is very difficult to predict. I'm looking at a water treatment plant that we're in early stages of design where we're planning to have it online in 2026. We know we have some unknowns there. I feel confident we can hit that 2026 mark, but there's some unknowns. We've got the Lost Canyon system. There's some unknowns on the actual operating capacity of Lost Canyon, which was discussed in the regionalization meeting, which impacts how much water we can treat, which impacts how much water we can deliver. And we've got increasing TDS and groundwater that we are trying to better understand. We're working with the Lachlan Water crew next year to help us to better understand what's going on, because we reduced our groundwater production in 2021 by about 700 acre feet compared to 2020. And yet TDS continues to climb. So TDS, total dissolved solids, the portion of that is salt and or salinity. And, you know, one of the thoughts is it could just be salting of the roads, that as our community has grown and as the salt has increased, now it's getting down into our groundwater sources, which is totally outside of, has nothing to do with how much water we produce, right?
Yeah.
So, with all those unknowns, my recommendation to the board is we don't deliver ever any water to Weber Basin in 2026. Yeah. I think there's too many moving pieces.
Drought's another one to add to the list. We don't know.
Yeah, how does groundwater recharge look if we continue into this drought cycle?
Our reservoirs will be.
I've struggled with this decision because there's a revenue impact, right?
Yeah.
We've communicated at a staff level. the staff's position has been supportive of, let's not deliver any water in 2026. Let's take a pause. In a year, we'll know more. I think it's likely that Mountain Regional, beyond 2026, will deliver some water back to Weber Basin. Not back, but we will again deliver water to Weber Basin as part of the master agreement, because the plant's going to be online, and I think we're going to have ample surplus, but there's too many unknowns.
If we do this, who's going to care?
If we take it to zero?
Yeah.
Park City.
Yeah, I mean, Park City's going to, it appears that they're going to deliver the water.
Yes. But that's who it affects. I mean, some of the water, ultimately, but Park City will have to make up the difference.
But you and Steve both feel like everything's...
With the growth that we've experienced and the projections, I think our growth, just like we've been able to kind of get through, with the customers and the decrease we're having this year in the 700, acre feet versus 1,100 this year, I think with the growth we'll be able to pick that up. I'm pretty concerned. I mean, I
know you are. That's
I like, obviously, having that revenue there, and it's locked in, it's 5 years, but I'm also concerned about, with the expansion going on, what's happening over the next few years with drought and climate change. And some of these unknowns that we're dealing with right now, for 250 acre feet, I'm just not sure I want to...
Yeah.
If it was more than that, then maybe we would take a better look, but I feel like for that amount, we need to be a little bit cautious on what we're willing to do. But I said, like Scott said, if we, when the plant comes back online and we feel like we can put something on the table next year.
Yeah.
So one of the things, though, that to your question is, who might care, is that the time could drive the timing of the import project a little bit if we're not putting that water on the table, then that makes the importation project
more urgent,
and that's why some of them care.
Yeah. So if
we all care.
Well, that's why I'm asking the question.
If Park City were to come back and say we can't cover it, that's going to trigger the
importation. Cover what?
Cover us reducing that projected delivery from 250 to zero.
Because we had put that on there before.
Oh, we have to deliver a 10-year projection.
Okay, so that was...
5 years is...
That wasn't firm.
No, 5 years is contractual. Okay. That year is moving into the contract. Right?
And before we said, maybe, and now we're saying, we've got a lot of growth, a lot of unknowns. And that's going to bring the importation project a little closer.
Yeah, it could. So, I think the takeaways are, can Park City cover that 250 acre feet in 2026? It sounds as though they can, based on conversations in the regionalization meeting. If they can, and we come back in 2027 with some water, now we're pushing that project out, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just that 2026 year, what are the impacts? I don't think there's going to be an impact other than Mountain Regional, not delivering it, thus not generating the revenue. Park City delivering it, they would generate the revenue. That's the difference.
Well, let me just play devil's advocate.
Yep.
We've talked about the moratorium, about possibility. We've also talked, we need to talk about when to say no. And what I mean by that is, have you given any thought to say, hey, we can't do any more water connections for whatever reason. Yeah. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't want to build just to build, and I'm very worried that we're going to run out of water because we're spreading like crazy in the canyons. The Dakota Pacific just pulled their development in Kimball Junction, but they're going to come back. I guarantee you, they're going to come back, bastards.
I think
They're businessmen, right?
They yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
They're just businessmen. That's their business, though.
Oh, I know, I know, I know. But, you know.
They're coming back.
We took 2 years, this time, for Basin Planning Commission to say no. And the council took a very short amount of time. Thank God they decided to pull back. But trust me, they're going to come back. And whether it's with more buildings or less buildings, we need to be prepared.
Thankfully, we're not going to serve it. Right, so that's out of our service area.
I'm sorry.
But at the end of the day, when the M word is used on development, I don't think they're sitting in there moratorium.
Okay.
I don't think they're making a distinction about where the water's coming from. It's just that I think some folks say there's this big pool of water here that's being
developed
by Gorgoza, by Mount Regional, by Summit, by Park City.
Sure.
So the only question I would be saying is let's just don't be the reason that a moratorium has to come about because of lack of water from Mount Regional for our customers.
No, but my point being is we need to be prepared. Yeah. That's all I'm trying to say.
Right, I hear what you're saying, because sometimes there's sort of these two approaches. It could be like the airport, you just know it's going to keep growing, and you just keep building them. And some of the, like, the water district down in Washington County, right, Vaughn Thompson, he just keeps building. He just knows it's coming. And
so,
right, because you can't, there's so many things to try and figure out.
If there's no downside at 2026 for taking the 250 off the table, you just have to ask, is it putting you in a position where you're smoking out stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have private companies here that don't have to tell you anything. You got public companies that do. You're just taking your position. If you take the 250 off the table, I guess it's going to give you some more clarity on what the whole regional situation looks like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not going to hurt our customers.
No, it's not going to hurt our customers.
So do you need...
No, I don't need more action. This is my duty. This falls within my duties to perform. I just want you to know what I'm doing, and I want, you know, your head nod that I'm on the right track. So.
Yeah.
And on that, I had two little questions.
Yeah.
So the Tier 2 and the Tier 3 rates are the rates that we calculated through the Zions process last year.
Correct.
And then we don't deliver in the spring just because in the spring and the fall.
Yeah, it's a because Summit Water's meter-based is customer in this, right? Summit Water doesn't need the water during that delivery time, that period.
So that's not our deciding.
We work together on a delivery schedule that this kind of was built years ago with Summit Water. They had delivery schedule. They provided a delivery schedule, and we said what we could do within that schedule. And this is consistent with that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. You know, to close that, Bill, you asked me a question, I didn't answer it. To close on that is, I believe my role as a water manager is to stay ahead of growth and to communicate with the council on our position and where we're at. And if we do not have the ability to stay ahead of growth, then we've got to have that conversation with the council that we need to do something. But I see it as my job is to stay ahead of it.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to be negative, but I just want us to be prepared.
Yeah.
We don't have to the answer per se, but we need to be prepared.
How does council get information on other water companies that are private? What I'm asking is how does the council get information on the ability for a company that's private to deliver water and look at their solvency?
I can answer that question.
I think that was the point of concurrency a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mike. Yeah. So through the concurrency process, all you know, us, Summit Water, Service Area 3, and High Valley all have to deliver information about what is our current water supply, some water quality metrics, and growth projections and source development projections, and they're doing the checks and balances.
But not business structure.
Not business structure. Yeah. So. Okay, moving on. We have two annexations on the agenda. The first one is in Summit Park, parcel PP-33-F. This is a parcel that, if I remember correctly, was not included in the original Summit Park subdivision. It was not included in the annexation into Mountain Regional because, again, it wasn't part of the subdivision. It's just a standalone parcel in the middle of Summit Park that somebody owns and has requested water service from us.
Seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah, so...
Okay. Just one single-family home, right?
Yep, it's zoned hillside stewardship, which Joel understands what that means. It's basically zoned for a single family with an accessory dwelling.
We're ready for a motion.
Yep.
Yep. Motion on that one. And again, it's a recommendation to the county council to annex this parcel in.
Okay, so I move for the parcel PP-33-F to be considered by the Summit County Council for annexation.
For a second.
Karen and Tim, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Nice. Okay, that was unanimous.
Okay, thank you. On that second one is parcel PP-2. This one is on White Pine Canyon Road. It is fairly close to the Canyons Village. It is just below the colony. And it is zoned Mountain Remote, which is even more restrictive with respect to development. Even to build a single family home, they need a low impact limit from the planning department. So what we understand is that, you know, if this family keeps it, they would do a cabin or something of the sorts. They have talked about possibly selling it. We don't have any idea, obviously, what that could turn into. I'm taking this at face value and what it's zoned for today. I'm recommending that we annex it in, and so that this person can sell the property knowing it has water service.
How do we serve it? Is there
We've got our colony transmission line that runs right past its southeastern corner there.
It's coming up White Pine
Canyon Road.
It's yep. where the pipe is.
Yep.
And that sits on that meadow tank.
White Pine tank would serve it at the base of the colony.
Is this the parcel that's like right uphill from Red Pine? A little snow machine and horse thing? I think it is, isn't it?
If you pass the Cabriolet lot, you just keep driving. Basically, where the development stops, you go another parcel or two, it's right there.
Oh, so right at the end of the gulf.
I think we're ready for a motion.
Okay, I move that...
I'm sorry.
Does Ian, do you have a question?
I think it might have been Chris.
I did not have a question.
Okay.
I move to send the annexation of parcel PP-2 to the Summit County Council with a positive recommendation.
Second.
That's Karen and Joel. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you.
Ian.
That was unanimous. Thanks, Ian.
Very quick update. We had a recent regionalization meeting. That's with Summit Water, Park City, Mountain Regional, and River Basin. We have these quarterly. You know, Mike, do you have any...
These are my notes. I took...
Wow.
Hmm. Right? There's... I got 9 pages here.
Do you have 1 or 2 or 3 takeaways that you had?
Well, it's kind of in that, yeah, that email to you. That's, I didn't understand, right? So the project costs are still $80 million. It's a lot of money. Doesn't deliver a lot of water. Water's really expensive, and I'd never seen it expressed that way at $25,000 an acre foot. I thought that was an annual cost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. I don't know what that number
They're just taking the you know, this whole need. It doesn't mean anything from a ratepayer perspective.
Right.
Which I have so, to boil down for Mike.
Because I thought, because then that turned into, you know, like $1,000 a month water bill. And now it's more like $1,000 a year.
Yeah, it was like $50 or something for the capital, right?
Yeah, or it was. So that's not that out of the question, what they're talking about. This, it's got legs, I think, is what, you know, I was seeing there, and you know, and Park City's in pretty good shape, we're in pretty good shape, and it's really Summit's curve that shows this water need. That's kind of what I heard.
I think the other important takeaway, for me and for the district is to really put the attention on the Lost Canyon project and understand what it can deliver. Is there any low-hanging fruit to optimize or increase its delivery slightly?
Yeah.
And let's get all the juice out of that orange first.
Right.
And then, you know, by identifying maybe those slight optimization measures that further pushes out this project. And then, you know, when that's fully utilized, then we have this conversation of what's next.
Their numbers are all over the place. That it went from a 5,000 acre foot project to a 3,000.
Yeah.
5,300 down to 3,300.
Yeah, and that was from a 2012, if I remember, a 2012 report, and then they just redid it today, and the need has dropped.
Which is kind of counterintuitive in that. The peak day rate went from 16,000 gallons a minute to 5,000 gallons a minute, which, so they're trying to size it down to get it more affordable.
Yeah, and I think the water usage per unit has dropped a lot over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And there was also an East Canyon Creek augmentation that the amount of water that they intend to provide to the creek was reduced. So.
Right.
Is that just because there's more high density homes being built?
Yeah, I think there's a density component. I think there's a water rate component. You know, years ago, we didn't have this tiered rate structure. It was more of a, I don't even know. Maybe it was a flat fee or whatever it was back then. So rates have played a role. People's awareness of limited water resources plays a role. I think it's a lot of things. So...
Right, and the short-term projects are probably Lost Canyon. And what's, I was trying to find what we think we can squeak out of Lost Canyon, though.
So that, I mean, that's a question that I've been pushing really hard on Weber Basin for, because what I can tell you is this. Bowen and Collins did a pre-design report. They said that system was designed for 9,270 gallons a minute. But what was actually constructed was different than the pre-design report. In some ways, it was upsized. And so my question to Weber Basin and to Bowen and Collins is, tell me what this system is designed to do. What is the safe operating capacity of Lost Canyon?
Oh, here it is right there. That's
and it. What I can tell you is that when the pumps are running in an optimized state, we can push about 10,400 gallons a minute. So... I think the answer is somewhere in between. I think it's going to be about 10,000. With some, maybe some improvements, we'll see if there's other little optimization efforts that we can do to push it further.
What is it? Yeah, it's, I don't know, it feels like they're making a little bit of headway.
Yeah, I think Steve Joyce did a really nice job of kind of calling them to the carpet and saying, look, we had the same conversation 3-4 months ago. And I'm not hearing any progress. You know, we need answers. He's like, Mom, regional needs answers. They're trying to design a treatment plant. Let's get some answers.
Where's so I think the water that, and let's figure out how to get it.
Yeah, so I think that said. I think we're gonna get some movement. I hope in the next couple of months.
Was there any discussion about consolidation at all?
No.
I don't know if you guys want to comment on that or not.
I don't have any comment.
Okay.
We didn't talk about it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I think that's a pretty good
idea. You might as well ask if the school districts are going to join together.
So anyway, that's my quick update on the regionalization meeting. I thought it was a productive meeting, maybe more productive than some of the other ones.
Yeah, well, and it's right, this used to be the last item on the agenda that they would talk about minutiae, and Clint does a good job. He said, let's move this to the top, and yeah, let's talk about it first, and let's go somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
The last thing on my update is the promontory, they're building a short course, an 18-hole short course, par 3 style course. It's called The Hills. It's just above the Palisades subdivision. This is a course that was planned from the very beginning of Promontory. Promontory originally planned to have 5 golf courses, I think, was in the original development agreement. They have 2 today. They're planning on adding the short course. It sounds like long-term plans. They don't expect to add any more, but time will tell. Sam and I and Brian primarily have been working closely with Promontory, with their development team and, primarily their development team. And, the long story short is that I don't have any issue with Promontory building a third course, so long as they stay within their water right allocation that they've been paying for 20 years.
What is that? I don't understand that. It's a reservation?
Yeah, so they... so
standby?
Mountain Regional pays Weber Basin for a mixture of contract water and exchange water that comes up through the Los Canyons system. And we pay lease fees every year. Mountain Regional has a water service agreement with Promontory, where Mountain Regional has agreed to provide Promontory 2,400 acre feet of water annually. As part of that agreement. So essentially 2,400 acre feet of Mountain Regional's Lost Canyon allocation is promised to Promontory.
Untreated?
No. It's the total needs of Promontory, so it's a mixture of treated water and untreated water. So all their golf course irrigation and the majority of their common area irrigation is untreated water coming through the Lost Canyon system. And then we treat, whatever we need to treat to support the demands of the homeowners in Promontory. But all of that is combined into our calculation of how much water Promontory is using. So we worked with them to get essentially a letter of agreement in place that says, that they agree to, sort of abide by our conditions, and then we would provide a positive or a no objection position to the planning department.
I wasn't sure. So is it no? So it's not a positive recommendation or a negative recommendation.
No.
It was just a.
It comes out for service provider review. So the planning department is asking, do you have any red flags from a service provider's perspective to support this project, and after working with Promontory, our answer is no. So, I don't promote the development or not. It's just a matter of, do we have any objection to the project?
Yeah.
So.
They did get approved tonight, by the way.
They did. Okay. Thanks, Chris. I think 2 important points that came out of this process were. It was important to Mountain Regional to have a discussion and make sure Promontory understood not only their annual allocation but their peak day, the peak day capacity of what that annual allocation means. When we think about Lost Canyon, we think about how many acre feet annually can it deliver and what's the instantaneous or peak capacity that it can deliver. And we worked with Promontory to make sure they understood that. They're working through a water, they don't like the term audit, but essentially a water audit of how much water are they using, how much water do they have left, do they have enough to get the build out. They've got some pretty big hurdles to get over to stay within their peak day capacity allocation. The annual allocation is not a problem. The problem is obviously golf courses are being irrigated in the summer. they're not consuming water in the winter. It drives the heat factor up. They need a lot more water in the summer than, you know, than, well, obviously the winter, but even potentially than what their allocation provides. So we're working with them on that. But so long as they agree in writing to stay within their allocation, then I'm comfortable letting them, for, you know, continue their development. So.
So that's really just an update.
An update.
This is all your deal.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it for me.
Well, very good. No,
I've got a question.
Yeah.
Where is the exact location of that golf course where it's proposed?
If you're looking at the promontory development from Home Depot, it's on the front side on the right-hand side.
Okay, so it's potentially upgrading and act as a recharge to some of our facilities. So
it's up, correct, exactly.
There's a footprint potentially.
Say that one more time, yeah?
There's a silver lining potentially.
Oh, I gotcha.
From a recharge perspective, so.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I think we're ready for item seven. Steve Anderson, a financial management update.
So quickly, an update on number 8, Scott Highway, from the County Council, get final approval for our budget. As you may recall, we just had two small amendments to our original presentation. One adding the $7,800 for the health.
Maybe you, yeah. Could you get a little closer to the mic or something? Maybe it's kind of hard to hear.
Yeah.
Please.
Yep. That's crazy because he's like super loud on my side.
Yeah.
Wow. People big at me. my camera's not on that. So as you may recall, we had two small amendments since we did the original presentation to the county, which we talked to you last month about. One was a $7,800 expense increase because of the additional amount the company would put into the health savings accounts for the employees, and the other was just an amendment on projected revenue for this year. County Council was fine with those, approved our budget, our final budget got approved with everything we requested or asked for. More of their questions ended up being about water and things like that in direct towards Scott. They were very interested in our drought contingency fund and plan and things like that. But that went very well. And then on the finance update, so we are at $7.33 million net position net income for the year, which is $4.48 million better than projected. Again, that comes back from the impact fee, the donor-related collections are so high. You'll see that we are at 410 new connections through November. Our average is 123. And then usage continued to be low in November, so we're slightly ahead of the four-year average, but when compared to last year, we've had a 14.1% drop in usage from 2020 to 2021. So those are just a few key statistics for November. We'll have a nice kind of a year-end report, and then a final 2021 once we get the audit, but in January we'll have a this is what the year looks like it finished as, and then when the audit is finished, we'll give you one last report on that. We are about $600,000 below on budgeted expenses for 2021. It's a combination of a lot of factors, not any one glaring one, but a lot of areas where we saved $30,000 or $40,000 in different categories. For example, electricity was down because we didn't have as much usage, so we didn't have to pump as much water. You know, the treatment plant chemicals, we budgeted those quite high on Leo's recommendation as he was retiring, and we haven't had to use as many of those this year as we thought. So just kind of a combination of a lot of things. We didn't have any major pump repairs in 2021, knock on wood, so we saved some money there. So that's why we've been able to come in under expenses as well. But everything, kind of the pattern for 2021 has just continued through November. Any specific questions about the report or anything?
Yeah. None from here, Steve.
Yep.
All right, sounds good. I'm done then, Scott.
All right, thanks very much.
Okay. Yes, thanks, Steve. Okay, so then we don't have Dave here tonight.
No, he's out of town tonight.
I was going to ask him to give us a little talk on maybe the mutual water companies and how they're organized and what they can and can't do.
Yep, so I sent him an email. He responded to me with a lot of information.
Yeah.
And I was hoping he was going to present that tonight, but since he's gone, I'll forward you that email. And, you know, maybe we could chat briefly about it at the next meeting.
I think it just kind of from the idea of how it fits into financing regionalization.
Mm-hmm.
But now that, that it's, that cost per acre foot numbers, you know, kind of makes more sense to me. I don't know that it's a high priority.
Okay, sounds good. After you read his email, it'll be even a lower priority on your...
Yeah, it'll be the priority.
Yeah, we'd have to dedicate a whole meeting.
Okay, thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
And so then the ninth item on the agenda tonight is department updates. Should we just go around the table? Karen, did you have
questions on the department updates?
And we'll jump into the cyber world with Ian.
I just have one question for Chris. Can you remind us what the metrics are that you're tracking on vehicles?
For vehicles, mileage, mileage, and like not function. As far as like where they're located, try and minimize trips from where guys are located. But also, there's a bunch of different stuff that we're working on. We're working on maintenance schedules based on, you know, odometers or engine run times. We've kind of started tasking Casey with some of that fleet management type of stuff.
Okay, so it's not into some of like the safety stuff. Like it doesn't record like excessive speed or abrupt braking or stuff like that.
It does. We can run reports on that. We're not tracking that currently. But we can. All that capability.
Okay. All right. That was it for me. Thank you.
Do you need to get home?
No.
Okay, that's
all right.
It for me.
Okay. Thanks, Ian. Tim, you're good.
Yep.
Yeah. I think this all looks just like it's just really nice work. So, do we have anything else to talk about tonight?
Well, just one minor point that we chatted a little bit about internally today was, we're back in person again. Right? We're having meetings originally that we're trying to keep staff levels to a minimum. Do we feel good about continuing with that approach? Do we want to eliminate restrictions for the rest of the staff to come? Where's the board kind of feeling with respect to COVID safety and you know the amount of people they want to see in these meetings? There's no wrong answer.
Right. I think we want to continue to do everything we can and split up and keep our space and practice the best we can.
Okay, so you're comfortable with the way that we're handling this now.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to do that.
I like how you've split the staff. I think that's really good. So if somebody is in contact, you don't lose your whole crew, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the way it works where I'm at, is if I come into contact with somebody, I can't go into work. And then if you find out you have contacted and then you do the contact tracing, they can't come. It can gut the place pretty quickly.
Yep. Any other thoughts? Happy with how we're doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, that's it, Mike.
How do you feel about it? Are you?
I think progressively, I feel like this is something that we're going to live with, you know, for a long, long time. And, generally. My feeling is more leaning towards getting back to normal, and if people want to attend, they can attend. So that's my position.
I feel bad if we can get boosters in Summit County, but it doesn't seem like that's.
If you really want one, you can get one.
Right? So, where I'm working, you have to have a vaccine to come into the office.
Well, Well, I'm vaccinated, but like I feel like it's been harder to get the booster than it seems like it should be. Yeah.
And what I mean by that is not within Summit County, but you know, I've gone to get a booster in another county just to get boosted.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You just need to be old and then it gets real easy.
I guess.
Okay, well, thanks. I'd like to thank the staff for this year, and not an easy situation. And I think you guys are really performing really, really well. And you know, I've really made a big difference in the community.
It's a big deal. Have a little holiday gift for you, too, as well. We really appreciate all of your dedication and all of your support of our team. It means a lot to us to have you here and participating, and it really it's
a... get a gavel? I want it.
So let's adjourn. The meeting business is over, so let's adjourn.
Okay. Well, we adjourned at 7:55.